episode of the world's best realtor podcast, or is this the podcast of the world's best realtor? We always let you decide that week by week. I'm Rick Bannon. I'm your host. I run the Bannon Group at RE/MAX First in Fort Lauderdale, and we power SoFloLife.com. So as we always do, I want to start off today with a quick market update of Broward County, which is where we do primary business. Although we do service the Tri-County area, Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach, our majority of business is in Broward. So Broward market saw a slight uptake in the market action index this past week. And again, we rely on Altos Research for our data as they provide the most current, relevant, and concise data that we've seen out there. So if you're an agent and you're not relying on Altos, then you need to look them up. So there wasn't a slight uptake in the market action index, but inventory did hold steady at around 3,900 properties for sale. So this shift is indicative of a slight inching towards more of a seller's market, but nothing of significance. However, it also does point back to the fact that we are still struggling to bring on the requisite inventory to really balance this market out. So we have a lot of action, but we're not seeing an increase in inventory. So what does that mean? That means that buyers are out there and purchasing homes at a slightly improved clip, but sellers are not listing. Or at least not listing enough. We aren't getting enough listings on the market to create more of a balanced market. So you know, you've got what we've got here. So the average days on market right now for homes is right around 100 days. And the median rent is now at around $3,800. So that's significant as far as the median rent goes, in that if you're on the fence of renting versus buying, have that strategic conversation with your realtor. Rents are going up. Rents will go up pretty much every year like clockwork, as they typically do. But talk to your realtor, about how that compares to getting into a home that fits your budget and what that means financially to you. Let them talk to you about that exhaustively. I won't go into that here. That's a whole, we could really go down a rabbit's hole on that. But the 32nd is, if you can afford at around $3,800 rent per month, there's no reason at that rent rate that you shouldn't be in a home, barring something significant like maybe some distressed credit. But even today, with a number of programs out there for first-time home buyers or home buyers that are struggling to put together enough money for a down payment, there are programs out there that can potentially assist with that. So again, get with your realtor. They've probably got one or two really qualified mortgage partners. If they manage their business worth a damn as a realtor, they've partnered up with some quality people. I know I've got a couple agents, or I'm sorry, brokers, mortgage brokers that I do business with, primarily Adam Baer, who was on our last episode. And he is just a absolute wealth of knowledge for situations like this, where someone is looking at spending about $3,800 a month on rent, and what he can do for you to get you into a home that's going to build wealth and equity versus just throwing your money away to somebody else who's going to take your money and make money off of your money. So that is the we're going to stop. We're going to kind of end it there with the market. So that's what we're kind of dealing with still here in Broward, as well as other areas around the nation, from my experience and having conversations with agents nationwide, as I do week in and week out. So we're going to get into some news here, and as we always do, and just talk about some of the things that are being put out to you as consumers. And give my take on it. And the first one I want to open up with is the Fed rate and how that's affecting housing affordability and inventory availability. So Chairman Powell, the chairman of the Fed, recently acknowledged that the higher borrowing rates are painful and inconvenient for buyers. And he understands that. He completely, which is good to know, that he's kind of got a realistic perception of what's going on with buyers. So he does know it's painful. It is hurting buyers. It's causing things to be more expensive for them. But he reiterated that the Fed is committed to bringing inflation back down to its target range, and that's about 2%. So until they start to see that, we're going to still see these elevated rates. The bond markets don't view a rate cut as likely until the Fed's September 18th meeting. So they're saying there's about a 54% probability that we'll see the first rate cut around September 18th when they have their next meeting. And they've got some follow-up meetings the Fed does before year's end. So the next meeting after that will be November 7th, and the probability rises to a 66 to 66% of a rate cut by then. And the final meeting for the year is December 18th, and bond traders are saying there's going to be about an 82% a likelihood of a rate cut by then. So does that mean that we are going to see one rate cut at one of these meetings before the end of the year and that's it? No, that doesn't mean that. That means that if there were to be one rate cut, then those are the predictions of the probability of that. However, the Fed obviously reserves the right to have a rate cut at each one of those meetings and discuss that, especially if they see the economy coming to the point where they really want to see that. So this is one of the top reasons for the state of the real estate market right now, if not the top reason, in that buyers are more a lot more calculating because of the rates. They're definitely any buyer is going to be rate sensitive to making a purchase, whether it be a home, which is likely their largest purchase in their investment portfolio, and as minimal as, you know, if you look down into a purchase of an automobile, you know, you're going to obviously shop that and see if the dealer's rate doesn't match up to what, you know, maybe you know, someone like a Capital One or something gives you. So this is continuing to be the top reason we're struggling with inventory. You've got buyers that are rate sensitive, and kind of holding their hand, and then you've got sellers who are probably in a lower rate for their home now, and clearly they don't want to get out of that home and jump into a new mortgage on a new home and pay a higher rate. Goes without saying. So unless there's an issue with a particular buyer or seller absolutely needing to sell or buy, in essence, maybe having a change a job or change a job location where they absolutely have to go, they're kind of being they're being a little more calculating and not so quick to rush to the market either as a buyer or seller. So we'll be talking more about that here in the following segments of this episode. I've got some other details I want to go into on that. In another news clip, Berkshire Hathaway became the latest victim in what I want to describe as a commission scam money grab. So Berkshire Hathaway recently agreed to settle for $250 million. And that brings the total of the recent real estate industry settlements up to more than $943 million just to make these lawsuits go away. We're approaching $1 billion. And anybody who's watching this unfold that knows the details of what the foundation is for the lawsuit knows it's a cash grab. It's just a crock a, it's just it's called it's a crock of shit. So you got a bunch of lawyers here that saw an opportunity, and you had some owners or some buyers or sellers starting with a complaint about having to pay the commission for buyers and how they felt that was unfair and that shouldn't be attached to them. And I've talked this exhaustively in prior episodes in that home sellers have never had to pay the buyer's agent. The home sellers have paid their agent a specific commission fee. And that agent chose to share their income, their money, because it happened after closing, with another agent if that other agent brought a buyer to their property based on the marketing that that listing agent did. So obviously, when we do marketing, it is seen by everyone. We do stuff online, we do stuff in print, we do stuff on billboards. So that's eventually going to land in the lap of buyers that have an agent to help them buy a place, and also agents that are helping buyers buy a place. So that's in another episode. We talked that exhaustively. We won't get too much into that. But at this point, we're talking about almost $1 billion of money. And one of the managing partners of one of the law firms went on record as saying that, and quote, "This is another significant settlement for American home sellers who have been saddled with paying billions in unnecessary commission costs." A guy named Benjamin Brown, who, with such a statement, couldn't better qualify himself as an absolute fucking moron, that's clearly had enough brain power to go to law school and pass the bar and do that. So congrats to him on that. But absolutely failing as someone who's got any kind of insight into professional industries. So their central claim was that there was a that the NAR, that all the commissions violate antitrust laws, which they didn't, because they've always been negotiable. We've talked about that before. And they went on to argue that homeowners who listed a property for sale in real estate in industry databases were required to include a compensation offer for an agent representing the buyer. And they never were. If you've ever sold a home and you paid a commission, you never paid a commission to the buyer's agent. You paid a commission to your listing agent. Your listing agent decided to take their income and share it with somebody who basically acted as a subcontractor for them and pay them. Same as you would if you were building a home and you had your primary contractor that was building the home and he had subcontractors working for him, and he took money out of the money you paid him to pay for those subcontractors to do part of that work. Same thing. What it was the cost of you hiring that contractor negotiable? 100 freaking percent negotiable. Have commission percentages structures been negotiable? Abso-freaking-lutely, every time. So what happened here is lawyers being lawyers saw a massive cash grab. And it's just funny that, not funny, haha. It's just funny this guy Benjamin Brown says that buyer sellers, home sellers, have been paying unnecessary commission costs for years, where our industry typical commission has been anywhere from 5 to 7%. So depending on the property, depending on actually de truly depending, not so much on the property, but depending on the quality of the agent. If the agent, just like anything else, if any other person is going to do a job for you, if they're a solid person and they can express their value, and you find the value in that person, you're gonna find the agreement. You're gonna come to an agreement to pay them maybe a higher rate because you know they're gonna be a better professional to serve your needs and serve your needs best. So same goes for any person that you hire. You always want to hire the best that you can afford. Clearly, just like anything else, there are some professionals that you can't afford that maybe others can, because they are more financially stable, make more money, whatever. But you just case in point, if you had to hire a lawyer, you probably wouldn't be able to pay for a lawyer, the same lawyer that maybe a professional athlete had to hire to defend him for something. That's going to be a high profile, high dollar lawyer. So you're going to have to, you potentially would interview that lawyer and obviously see that they have a phenomenal value offer. Can you afford that? So you go to the best person for you at the rate you can afford. And for us in commissions, it's been typically 5 to 7%. It's just, what is it required? No, but that's typically where it lands. If you hire a lawyer and they do work for you and they're going to take a share of your settlement, that's typically 33.3%. So now you've got lawyers that are taking 33.3%, which is commonly considered their industry standard, making commentary about another set of professionals making between 5 and 7%, which is just so rich. And if you do the math on what 33% of a near $1 billion settlement is, that is like generational wealth. So I don't know of any agent, whether they're a personality on excuse me, on TV, on a real estate program, or anyone else that has ever had the opportunity to build generational wealth from a single transaction or a handful of transactions, as these are a handful of settlements. But the people that are running that cash grab are trying to shift focus onto the people that they're going after, saying that they're unnecessary fees. So are unnecessary fees, how would they feel if we said their fees were unnecessary as a lawyer? They've got all of their built-in costs as a lawyer, from maybe the secretary. Clearly they've got they do advertising themselves, they've got legal fees, I'm sure they've got professional associations that they pay for. So it's cost of doing business that we also share similar, very similar costs. We have assistance, we have closing assistance, we have fees we have to pay every month to our brokerage. We've got fees to pay to our board. If you belong to numerous boards, you have numerous fees, different boards to pay. So these are all factored into to what we make. But when you think about someone who is bringing the focus to another professional that makes pennies on a dollar compared to what they make as far as percentages of their rate, it's kind of it's disturbing. Let's just say what it is. It's disturbing, and they're just, shifting focus. So those of us that see the truth see it's a cash grab, and shame on them for that. So you've got to also compare the this commission idea to other professions that make money off of that make their living off of commissions, or let's just say a tip. Let's just compare that to a server in a restaurant. When we go in and sit down at a restaurant, the service is good. What's the tip typically? 20%, right? That's kind of the standard, 20, 18 to 20%. For me, if you're solid at your job, 20%. If you do your job well, you automatic 20% all day long. I'm giving you that. That's what's expected by a server. And that's what they, that's just kind of what the norm has become. If they're really good at what they did, and that you had a special occasion and they kind of knocked it out of the park with their service, maybe there's bottle service at the table, maybe they did something special with bringing a certain cake or celebration to your table for an anniversary, birthday, whatever the case may be. Maybe they get 25%, maybe they get 30%, whatever. It's your choice, right? But has anybody even thought about bringing a class action lawsuit against the service industry to say, we're tired of these 20%, tip or commission, you want to call it, it's commission, the 20% commission tip fee that we have to pay, for, every dinner that we, there's always expectation, because if you tip your server, let's see, you tip your server 5%, 6%, like what we feel between 5 and 7%, what a agent makes. They would leave there so pissed when you left the table and would question, like, what the fuck did I do wrong to deserve a 5%, 6%, 7% tip? They would be livid. When I was a server years ago, a waiter in college, if someone left me a 5% tip or 6% tip or 7% tip, I would be fucking livid. And any server would be, right? So where's the lawsuit for that? Because there are a whole lot more servers than there are realtors. And think about what tips are these days. Everyone expects that 20% tip. It's gotten kind of out of control, but that's we're not going to get into that. But when you've got people that are handing you fast food, and you get a receipt, and there's or when you go to pay at the electronic credit card terminal, you have the option to tip them. That's become kind of out of control. But when you have a sit-down restaurant and someone's serving you, yeah, there's that expectation. And in other countries, from what I understand, servers don't get tipped. But again, this goes back to another episode we did in comparing American realtors to realtors of foreign countries. Don't. You don't compare the two. You might as well compare how law enforcement it works. You might as well compare, laws of the land. There's no, it's a foreign country. They do things different. That's why it's called a foreign country. So, lawyers at the get-go knew that there was going to be an awesome cash grab here. They're making a buttload of money, and to be honest, it's just sickening. It just kind of paints more of a picture of the profession, the legal profession, and what the general public, how they view them, and it's unfortunate. So yeah, Berkshire Hathaway did become the latest entity, real estate entity, to pay out to avoid a lawsuit, and the lawyers know that. Lawyers know that these companies aren't going to litigate them because it's going to cost them a fortune, and the lawyers also know how much cash these companies have on hand. So they know that if a company's got 300 million cash on hand, and they know that the litigation could get costly, and then after it's costly, then they lose. So it's a double loss financially for them. They know that they got them on the hook for X amount of dollars. And that's exactly what this is. And it's sickening. So that is just the latest development in that. We're near $1 billion in settlements, and the lawyers are loving it. They're just getting richer and richer, and they're still pointing a finger at us and, just misleading the general public, continue to mislead the general public over how commissions have worked since the inception of them. So we're gonna move along to another story here about Florida real estate sellers slashing home prices as inventory surges to uncomfortable levels. So that was actually a news headline. And when I saw that, I'm thinking to myself, where have levels of inventory surged to uncomfortable levels? We would love here in South Florida to have uncomfortable levels of inventory. But we don't. So there are areas throughout the state where they are seeing a surge in inventory, and they do have in certain other spots of the state. I know this because agents, part of my team, are there, and I speak with them on a regular. So they are contending with that. So they've got a lot of inventory coming on the market, and buyers still aren't moving because of the rates. So what I will say about this is that you, as a consumer, you've got to read between the lines big time, especially with a headline like this. And especially if you're considering selling and you see that, sellers are having to slash home prices, clearly you don't want to go in a market where you're like, oh, I know my home's worth this, but I'm going to have to slash my price because inventory is surging. Talk to a professional realtor that can articulate what is going on in your specific market, because going off of these sensationalized headlines is not going to help you. These kind of headlines paint a picture that isn't necessarily a half truth. So yes, there are areas where there's a lot of inventory and home sellers are having to look at, potentially coming down in price. Is it rampant? Is it widespread? Is it epidemic in the state of Florida? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So again, this is new sensationalism 101, and just talk to a qualified agent before you make any kind of decision based on a headline. So home price reduction when your home is listed is a strategic decision you should always talk to your agent about. Clearly, if you're not getting traffic, and this has always been real estate rule 101. If you're not getting any traffic or interest in your home in any market, it's probably typically due to the pricing it's at. Now, I say that as a blanket statement, but you also, especially in this specific market, this very particular market, you've got to consider everything else going on in the market. So I say it's a strategic decision because that's exactly what it is. So it shouldn't be a knee-jerk reaction. If you've got to get out of your home quick for whatever reason, then have that conversation. Be as open as you possibly can with your agent. They need to know everything impacting you as a client so they can best serve you. So in a situation like this, definitely have that conversation about a home price reduction. It's a strategic conversation to have with your realtor, and don't base your decision to go one way or the other off of a news story headline. Like if you're typically a smart enough person, will understand that. So well, we go from that to another news story that recently ran saying the Florida housing market is healthy, and that's according to a CEO of a builder of a building of a development company, D.R. Horton. Actually, the CEO of D.R. Horton, which is the nation's largest home builder, said that good migration and job growth in Florida is a plus for the housing market. Yeah, that clearly, yes. And that months of supply has crept up slowly across most of our markets. Yeah, let's talk about that. Crept up slowly across most of the markets. Crept up slowly is absolutely true. As I was just detailing, there are certain markets here where inventory is in a buyer's market, and those are very specific and unique to those areas around the state. But mostly speaking, there is still a creeping supply to bring us up to a more of a balanced market and out of this seller's market where we're lacking inventory. So yes, there's definitely some truth there. But again, you've got to always refer to your local realtor and ask them how these ideas apply to you and your situation locally. So the CEO of D.R. Horton went on to say he expects it's going to take significantly more homes to come on before we see a lot of impact on our ability to sell. And that goes without saying. And I think we should add on another point we talked about previously in this episode regarding mortgage rates. And that's going to have an impact as well. So, yes, as significantly more homes start to come on board, that's going to help them improve the situation. But what we really need to see happen is inflation kind of get under control to the point where the Fed is comfortable making those rate cuts. So his summation kind of falls in line with what we know to be factual about what will take to move us into a more balanced market. Homeowners and buyers willing to make a move with lower, would be willing to make a move with lower interest rates, and that'll bring more homes onto the market and will spur an uptick in market activity. So again, these are just kind of basic economic, principles that we know how they apply into the real estate market. And that's kind of what we're holding with bated breath on the next Fed meeting, because a rate cut, you watch. Yeah. And I'm going to make this call right now. First time there's a rate cut, there's going to be countless news stories how like, oh, here it comes. And you know, how things are so much more affordable, and they're going to sensationalize it because they need new news stories to drive clicks to the website for advertisers and making money. So it's all about money, unfortunately. So we expect that. And we expect there to be more buyers making a move to be active in buying properties. And in the same sense, more sellers, now that rates would have come down, be interested in listing their properties and actually maybe go to the market with their properties. So you watch. The first rate cut will definitely spur a lot of news stories. I'm making that call right now. If they do a second, it'll be even bigger in their story. And if they do a third before the end of the year, that'll be huge. That'll be huge only because we don't anticipate any one of these cuts to be a massive rate cut. I think what they'll probably do is kind of inch it down. And the Fed is always responds, a little conservatively when they've got rate adjustments. So that would be most expected. So what will that mean in mortgage rates? I don't know, maybe 0.5%, 0.25%, 0.75%, 0.5%. I'm going to say right now, I would bet against that. And if anybody out there thinks that it's going to go from 7 to 5, just hold what you got, because we're not going to see that. I would be shocked to see a 5% mortgage rates before year end. Low sixes, in the sixes, definitely. I shouldn't say definitely, potentially. But dipping down, full 2 points below where we're at now, That's just not going to happen. I would be floored. I just don't see our economy making that kind of massive move that quickly, and you have an inflation just drop. I think it's a 2.8% or something like that. Drop almost a whole point, and have the Fed be comfortable enough to just slash the crap out of the rate. So I don't see that happening. So keep an eye out for that. I'm gonna make that call right now. First interest rate is gonna drive a bunch of news stories, and we'll probably be talking about it here. And then if the Fed can find itself to do a second one or a third one by year's end, that would be huge, huge news. And we'll definitely talk that exhaustively later on this year. So in another news story, Dave Ramsey, who as you know is the personal finance author, went on to say now is the time to buy. And with everything we've just said in this podcast, you're probably scratching your head like, why would this guy, Dave Ramsey, who's in the know, say now's the time to buy when Rick has just told us that a lot of people are holding off buying because of what the interest rate is? And I'll tell you this, as much as I'm saying that's what buyers are doing, if I were to consult you as a buyer, I would tell you this is typically what buyers are doing. But here's what I would say to you. If you fall in line with that and you hold off until the rate drops to make a move, you ultimately will be paying more per month on that mortgage next year for for a mortgage that is cheaper rate-wise, but you're going to be buying a property that's now had a year of time to appreciate. And when you consider we typically see average appreciation 4 to 6%, sometimes depending on, and that's generally speaking, in different micro markets across South Florida, you could see more than that, especially with the type of property. So what you would have is a more expensive per month mortgage rate, because the right thing to do is, and what he says, and what he predicts is that when interest rates go down, prices may go up. He predicts that we also know that may happen. So there is a lot of speculation that interest rates will go down sometime in 2024. We just talked about that. He goes on to talk about that. And then what the big question is how will sellers respond to an increase in demand by buyers now that are more comfortable going to market with lower rates? Would they raise prices? Will sellers flood the market with additional inventory? Because here's the question I have. So we've got laws of supply and demand, right? And that works for all tangible goods, right? So when you have a low supply, typically people that own that low supply can demand more money because that particular thing is harder to get your hands on. Think about in the past crazes with toys like at Christmas. Think about that popular toy every Christmas where there's limited inventory on the shelves and the prices go through the roof and buyers lose their flipping mind at Christmas for the kids, right? Similar kind of idea. So will sellers flood the market with the inventory we've been needing? Yet to be determined. But I can tell you this, when the rates drop, that whole process of getting properties on the market isn't going to be a snap of the finger, knee-jerk response. Well, the following day, we suddenly have, the inventory we need to have a balanced market. It's gonna take some time to build. During that time, what Dave Ramsey is saying is that there could be an increase prices in homes, which always happens, right? So you've got the hot item. So you've got the hot item, which a house, right? A property. And there's not much of going around. And suddenly it becomes more affordable for people that want that item to buy that item. What do you think is going to happen? That's pure economics. That's capitalism 101. And I wouldn't even say shame on the sellers. I would say that's just what we just an option that we consider may happen with such a market. We know that it could happen, and you know what? The sellers will get what that market at the time supports them getting. So TBD, we'll have to cross that bridge when we get there. So Ramsey goes on to say, as I just did, that you can always refinance at some point in the future. And that is the sound advice. And Dave Ramsey, a super smart guy, everybody knows that, usually gives, information and advice that's right on the mark. And this one is right on the mark as well. 100% falls in line with what I've told people and what I've figured out with simple mortgage math, is that when home prices, well, you buy now at this current mortgage rate, when mortgage rates, I'm sorry, go down in a year, you can now refinance at a lower rate at last year's prices because you already owned it for a year, or let's say 2 years, right? Home buyers that have waited for those rates to come down, they're the ones that are now screwed themselves. And it's just pure math. If you think it's a selling point, if it's a kind of a bait and switch, if it's some kind of used car salesman, hook to get you to buy a home with me, I'll run the math for you. You get a hold of me and tell me the home you're looking at. I could tell you what that area has appreciated in the past couple of years. We can do that math, and I can show you. Math doesn't lie. Facts don't lie. I can show you how buying now, refinancing later, will absolutely save you money in the long run. And this home ownership is a long run investment. So nobody buys a home and sells a home in a few months when appreciation goes up. There's just you typically there's not enough movement to for it to make sense. So this advice from David Asby is 100% falls in line with what we know to be true with simple mortgage math. So that was a great article. And if you're looking at buying now, heed that warning, heed that advice, talk to a realtor, get a hold of me. We'll definitely walk you through what that would look like and get you set up so you've got some financial success in a year or two time when people that have waited are now behind eight ball. So another story that came up recently was there was a national survey, and the survey saying that housing discrimination is widespread. And the part of society that were most likely to say they have had experienced discrimination was the LGBTQ plus as a portion of society, which I gotta tell you, for any subset of a society that falls in a minority classification, to say they have experienced discrimination is just a sad statement. And I would say shame on my fellow agents that have allowed such a thing to happen with their client or potential clients or prospects, because that just absolutely shouldn't happen. So I take exception to this because I've always held the idea of housing equality very close to my heart. When the average person looks at me, like you're looking at me right now, if you're seeing this video, what do you see? You see a white guy, brown hair, blue eyes, and automatically you equate, well, just average, just Caucasian. Rick's a white guy. But if you know my family background, you know that I have a very diverse background that is very much minority background. My family came from Cuba many years ago, escaping all the things that were going on with Castro. So I've got family members that were in the Cuban government prior to Castro. And if you have ever looked at my genealogy, I did one of those DNA tests and seen, you'll see a majority of, especially it comes from my mom's side, is Hispanic. You'll also see that I've got family from I've got African descent in me as well. And I think it was like around 7% African. And I've also got, actually, it's not even a small percent. I think I've got like indigenous American, like 1.2, 1.5%. Would never claim to be a Native American. Would also never claim to be an African American, clearly. So if you see me and I wanted to convince you that I'm African American because I've got 12% of my family from Africa, Sub-Sahara and West Africa, you'd probably laugh. You would think it's a joke. But it's not. And I take the whole housing equality aspect of my job extremely seriously. And I can say that for me, as a heterosexual male, It doesn't matter to me what you do behind closed doors as a consenting adult. I don't care. I honestly don't want to hear about it. So I've had clients that were openly gay. I've had clients that I had come to find out were gay, and just doesn't matter to me. I mean, it doesn't matter what you choose to do with your life. If you're happy in what you do with your life and that makes you happy, then it's none of my business. And I am definitely, nobody appointed me to be the source of condemnation or judgment on this earth. And that's just the way I've always viewed it. And it doesn't matter if what you choose to do with your personal life doesn't fall in line with what I do with mine. That's our choices. Just as much as my hetero friends, I don't want to know what they do behind a closed door either. I really don't. It's their business. My married friends, I at no point don't want to discuss what my married friends are doing with their wife or their husband behind a closed door. Gross. Just leave. Don't even leave that to imagination, because I'm not imagining that. Leave that just off the table. So I make light of that, because that's kind of my approach, and I just don't get too wrapped around an axle on anything like to do with your status as a minority. But we are legally required as agents to treat everyone equal with securing their housing for them. So the fact that they're experiencing housing discrimination, and it's widespread according to this article, if that has anything to do with agents steering or not wanting to work with someone, or not being as proactive with a potential client because of any part of their minority status, then shame on them, and they should be fired. Fired. They should have their license just revoked and never to work in the industry again. I've fired a number of clients that have expressed racist views to me openly. And I had one gentleman, we were in a neighborhood looking at condos, and we got back to the car. And he just opened up about, I don't want to be in a neighborhood with all these people here, and like yada yada. And he wanted to talk about them as a minority and use a lot of expletives that I won't even get into here. And I was just, because he was a minority himself. He was, yeah, I'll tell you what he was. He was Hispanic, so he's a fellow Hispanic, and he just lays in on this other minority. And I'm scratching my head on it, and I just can't believe what I'm hearing. So I flat out told him, I said, everyone's free to have their personal opinion on whatever they want to in this country, but I can't work with you anymore. That's just way over the top. So I fired him on the spot. And he wasn't, thankfully, he wasn't under a representation agreement with me at that point, because I've had to unfortunately address that with people that are under representation agreement with me and in the middle of a transaction, and then fire them afterwards for saying just some of the just most horrible things about another human that have no place and that aren't even accurate. So this survey here was a little troubling for me. The survey found a majority of respondents, 57%, report experiencing some kind of housing discrimination, with groups such as the LGBTQ plus populations reporting discrimination at higher rates. So again, that's an unfortunate aspect of every society. There's always going to be discrimination. But if any of this comes from the agent side, then shame on them, and they should flat out have their license revoked and never to be licensed again in any state. Now, we just don't have any room for that in our industry. So if you as a buyer or a seller ever experience any kind of discrimination or think you're being discriminated against, what I would say is, if you're not comfortable clearing the air with your particular agent, if there's a feeling that maybe you feel like the agent might have some discrimination towards you, but it hasn't been, maybe there's still up. He said a couple of things in passing. If you had that level of comfort with them, I would express that, hey, a couple of things you said kind of hit me as, and express it to them. Allow them to clear the air. If if it was a flat out discriminatory comment or action, then I would advise you to report them to the board. There is just no room for such people in our industry. So you can find out what your local real estate board is. You can find out, what board they belong to. You can ask them that simple question. If they don't want to answer, then if they think that you're going to be submitting a complaint, all you do is call their brokerage and just say, "Hey, I'm dealing with John Smith, and they're my agent. Been looking at some things with them. What board does he belong to?" And they'll give you that information. So report them. Don't tolerate that. And anybody who's ever experienced discrimination from an agent, on behalf of them, I want to extend an apology for that and let you know that that type of agent isn't the typical in real estate. And if you're a realtor, you're supposed to be held to a higher degree of accountability through the National Association of Realtors. And if you see your agent is operating outside that accountability, absolutely report them and get them off the streets, so to speak, as an agent. So, in a different in a different news story recently, a listing broker came under in hot was in hot water with the board and got in trouble with the real estate the code of ethics when they failed to affirmatively recommend that a buyer consult with their own attorney. So as the story goes, there was a listing agent that had a listing, and buyer came and they started negotiations, and the buyer made an offer, and it was a solid offer. Actually, I think it was a full priced offer, which is awesome. And you always, if you have someone come in and they like the house so much, and you can express when you express some value of anything, they see the value of the home and it's priced within what the market will support. That full price offer is typically, the golden goose. You jump on that, and especially if they're a qualified buyer or have cash in hand. And I believe this was a cash sale as well, so they had proof cash, and that's a no-brainer. The seller surprisingly countered with a higher price. So imagine that. Before we finish the story, I was shocked that a seller had a full price offer cash on their home, but then decided to counter the full price offer with a higher price. Again, free to do that. I never seen or heard that personally. I never had that happen with a client. And if I ever had a client attempt that, I would probably have a very direct conversation on, "Hey, why did we come? This is what we found. This is what you wanted, and this is what I told you that the home would be worth, and you should take this amount, or we should open, with listing this amount, and you got it. What's your thought process with this?" I would tell them flat out, you could derail this if they don't want to go higher. If you're gonna dig your heels in, and this doesn't work with this buyer, then we need to relist the home and up the asking price. So, as the story goes, the buyer agreed to it, actually begrudgingly agreed to it. But what happened in the process was the buyer said that they felt that legally the seller couldn't do that, and they wanted to consult an attorney and get an attorney involved and see if they could make them sell at a certain price. And now I'm going to say, I'm going to preface what I'm about to say with saying I am not a lawyer, never been to law school, and this is not legal advice. But for everything I know about selling goods, if you're the owner of the goods, you can ask whatever you want for those goods. The buyers simply can agree to pay it or not. So I'm gonna preface what I just said. I'm gonna add to what I just said after what I prefaced before saying that, and again say I'm not a lawyer. It's not legal advice. I've never been to law school. So again, if you ever come into such a situation, speak to your lawyer about that. So what this particular agent did is they told the buyer that in their opinion, litigation would be time consuming and expensive, and ultimately they would not be able to force the seller to sell. The buyer agreed to pay the higher price and a deal closed. However, after it closed, the buyer filed an ethics complaint against the agent with the board. Now, I don't know if you could do that. If they, like I was just saying in the prior news story, you can file, if someone's not treating you ethically correct, you can report them to the board. The board will investigate it and handle it accordingly if there's any truth to it. So, she was called in for an ethics hearing, and she was actually found to be in violation of of ethics. And it was Article 13 of the Code of Ethics. So we have articles of ethics that we have to follow as realtors that's set out by the NAR. In this Article 13, it says realtors should not engage in activities that constitute the unauthorized practice of law and shall recommend that legal counsel be obtained when the interest of any party to the transaction requires it. So where she made the mistake is saying, well, if you get, go into litigation, all that could be costly, could it could extend a time to close, and ultimately you really can't tell the seller what they, can or can't sell their property for. What she should have done to CYA, cover your ass, CHA, cover her ass, is say, hey, that's my perspective, but I advise that you speak with your lawyer. So that is how I always cover my ass. And what you have to do, what you have to realize is this: when you come to a real estate agent with questions, legalities of real estate, there is so much that we can, there are things that we can comment on as licensed agents and subject matter experts in the field. However, when it comes down to specific laws and talking about legalities, we absolutely we're supposed to defer you to legal representation for that. Now, if someone has a very general question about, how the transaction works, or hey, they're requiring me to, in the transaction requirement, you have an escrow, pay escrow, is that legally required? My reply would be like, well, if you signed it on the contract, you agreed to it contractually, you're obligated to pay that escrow. So we can comment on things like that are just factual things, especially when it concerns what the buyer or seller has agreed to in contract and signed their name to. However, what I always tell people, just to get to see to cover my ass, is if you have any questions about the legalities of this or anything, take this to your attorney. I can recommend a couple attorneys and have them give their two cents. I commonly get the question about getting attorneys involved by my clients that are from the Northeast, particularly in New York, because apparently in New York, attorneys are involved in everything. I mean, don't get me started on attorneys. They are definitely valuable, but good God, especially in a state like New York, they just can get themselves, interject themselves into everything. And I won't, I'll just bite my tongue on that one. But anyway, I always tell the, especially my clients coming out of New York, like, hey, here's the deal. You are absolutely free to get an attorney involved, and I have no problem with that whatsoever. Because a lot of times, well, do I need to hire an attorney to draw up the contract? And my response always is, in Florida, we use typically 99% of the time, we use what we call as a FAR Bar contract. And I tell them what FAR Bar stands for. So it's Florida Association of Realtors, Florida Bar Association contract. So I tell them, look, this contract has been reviewed and approved by the Florida Association of Realtors and the Florida Bar Association. So I say it's already been legally reviewed to be a fair contract. Now, I add a couple of things, protective verbiage to paragraph 20 of the contract. If you really know the contract, you know what paragraph 20 is. That's where we can add some additional stipulations and things there without creating an additional addendum. So I always tell them that barring anything being added to the contract that's not part of the form, it's already been legally reviewed. However, and here's the big however, if you want to pay for an attorney to hire an attorney to review this contract and review the stipulations of it, 100% you're free to do that, and I have no objection to that. I've had a recent client that we're under contract with right now that had his attorney review the terms of the contract, and he just wanted to have a separate set of eyes on it. And again, you know what? If it's going to bring an additional sense of relief or sense of certainty to my client, then yeah, let's, you know, if you have a lawyer that you trust and you know, or I, like I said, I can recommend one. But if you have someone that you commonly use, by all means, I'm not, you know, I've got nothing to hide. And if it is going to create a more of a sense of calm with you and take a little bit of stress off you with knowing, like, hey, look, you know, my realtor seems to be pretty solid. Me, as reviewed this, is, you know, everything looks good here, and my attorney reviewed it. He's, I've got two, you know. And then you, as a buyer or seller, can say, you know what, I've got two professionals that have blessed off on this. I'm good. I know I'm in good hands. And it just, if it provides a sense of certainty or relief to you, 100%. So this particular agent did not advise the buyer that they could or should refer to a lawyer, and it cost them. And unfortunately, it seemed to be a real innocent thing with her. She didn't have any, she wasn't out to really, she, there's no malintent there. But as a realtor, you've got to really know how, what you can and can't say, and what you are obligated to do based on the NAR code of ethics. So you, as consumers, if you ever ask a question of your agent and they refer you to an attorney, don't think it's because your agent is substandard or is lazy or whatever. Understand that we are required to refer you to attorneys for legal questions that we ascertain that are outside of our scope of what we can or can't comment on. And things like this are clear cut. If someone has a question about, well, can they do that? I don't think they can do that. Absolutely, I would never say, well, you're gonna run into all this and delay things, it could be costly. If I were to say that, I would might say, well, this could prolong things. And ultimately, I believe that, you know, just based on anybody that owns a tangible object can sell it for whatever they want. You know, there's really, I don't know if anybody could force them to sell it, you know, at less. But I'd say, but I would ask your attorney that. Confirm that with your attorney. And I definitely wouldn't just say that. I would follow that up with an email to reiterate what I had said. That way, if there's ever a question of he said, she said, then you have that email as, hey, I confirm what I said here. And there was never a reply back to counter what my confirmation was. So again, agents, CYA, 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 and consumers, understand that sometimes we have to CYA and sometimes we have to defer you to an attorney. And it's not, it all it is us doing right by you. Okay. So, that was an unfortunate thing this particular agent had to deal with. So, we've got another news piece here talking, going back more into home prices and purchasing and what that's currently looking like with luxury homes. So an article recently found that nearly 50% of luxury homes purchased from December to February were all cash sales because wealthy buyers have more financial flexibility. Okay. The sky is blue. The sun is a certain degree of orange red. You know, tell me something I don't know. So wealthy buyers, of course, have more financial flexibility. And so when the article went in to talk about the highest share of all cash luxury home purchases in at least a decade, this was the highest share of all cash luxury home purchases in at least a decade, and it's up from 44% a year earlier. So as the saying goes, rich get richer, right? Money always makes money. And my experience with wealthy buyers and sellers is the same. I mean, it just goes without saying. If you're wealthy, you have more financial flexibility. Typically, that is just a statement of fact. However, I would say the same is now going for homeowners with years of equity to rely on. And I say this because I've been reaching out to a bunch of homeowners that are, you know, prospect clients in my database, and making them aware of the equity that they have in their homes. And there are some homeowners sitting on enough equity in their home to purchase the homes they're looking at on my website for cash. So I've uncovered a number of homeowners in my database through different tools I use that have an incredible amount of equity built into their home. And these are not even what we would consider luxury homes or super elite homes, multi-million dollar homes, things like that. There are a few that some prospect clients have owned that they bought for anywhere from 5 to 700,000 many years ago, and now the home's worth 2, 3 million. So I say this because, of course, home ownership builds wealth, right? Kind of, that's something we always tell people that are thinking about buying, especially first time buyers. It's going to be probably the largest piece of your investment portfolio. But definitely, this increased wealth of people that maybe wouldn't be considered, wealthy, has allowed them to build enough equity in their homes to where some of the homes they're looking at on my site, they could potentially buy cash and you move here to South Florida, or with a lot of them that are retirement age, get out of the home, the two-story home that they're in. A lot of people that are retirement age like to go to a one-story home. It's less up and down stairs, and maybe they're looking at downsize, whatever the case may be, and they've got enough equity to do that. And I've seen a number of them and had to start having these conversations recently with them to do that, buy cash and then have money, to put in the bank. So I say this because it's not so much only the wealthy that have more financial flexibility. It's those that have owned homes for a decent amount of time. And what would a decent amount of time be? That's going to flex from real estate area to real estate area, and obviously from type of property you own and where you own it and all those things. But those are great conversation starters to reach out to a realtor with and, have them run a valuation report for you. We use professional software that's not, please, please, please don't rely on a Zestimate on Zillow. Zillow's Zestimate is something that when I hear people that have told me that I saw their property value on Zillow, I've got to almost bite my tongue off not to laugh. And I'm laughing at them, but just laughing at the fact that Zillow is just still such a real estate monster with so much money that they still have the general public buying into their Zestimate as a quality resource for valuation. It's gotten better over the years, don't get me wrong, but it's still not the standard. If that was the case, then when we meet with appraisers, we would hand them a Zestimate printout. If we were doing valuations for people, we would use Zillow's Zestimate. So think about that for a second. The professionals that do this for a living don't use that tool. Ask yourself why. There's a reason why. Because we have better tools that are designed by our professional organization, the National Association of Realtors, and given to us, and then we use. So I digress. If you have been in your home for 2, 3 years, 4 years, or better, and you have any kind of idea about moving, get a hold of an agent, get a hold of a realtor, get a hold of me if you're local in the Tri-County area, and reach out to them and say, hey, I'm looking at potentially, look at my options for selling, and can you send me over a quick valuation? And they will happily do that because they know that, if you're reaching out to them, they want to establish, I want to establish a relationship with you, because ultimately, if you go to sell, they want to list your home. And again, that's just business. Don't be afraid of that. If you were in a field where, building relationships improved your ability to make a living, you would do the same thing. So you can preface, that by saying, hey, look, I'm not looking to list anytime soon, but I'm just looking to see where I'm at now. And tell them, like, I may check in every, 4 or 5 months, 6 months. Or, hey, can you get me on a regular, valuation update email? Because I do that with my clients. All my clients in my database that I've got set up are on an automatic, if they're a homeowner, they automatically once a month get an updated valuation. Because I want to be a service to them. I want to be a resource for them. And again, it's just good business for building future business. But that will give them a real good insight into the wealth that they've got growing for them and the rate at which it's happening. So maybe they can do some projection. Maybe if they see, the rates growing at whatever rate, that maybe in 6 months might be the time for them to make a move. Maybe in a year, maybe a year and a half. But again, those are great strategic conversations to have with your realtor. And the reason for this discussion on this particular article is that I want you to understand when you see something like that, it's not just wealthy buyers that have more financial flexibility. If you got into a home and you've been in a home for a while, that home provides you with some financial flexibility. And if you're looking to make a move, find out what level of financial flexibility you've got with the equity built in that home. It might be a pot of gold for you. It's one of those kind of savings accounts that you never look into, and you just kind of let grow and grow and grow. So keep that in mind if you are looking to make a move, and you're not someone that you consider to have to be of wealth, but understand that you probably have a decent amount of wealth in the valuation of your home. Find out what it is by reaching out to a realtor. So this is kind of where I'm going to wrap it up at. I appreciate you joining me again today, and hopefully I provided some great insight on some news articles and different talking points. And tune in next week when we're going to have a new guest speaker. And until then, be well, stay healthy, and this is the podcast of the world's best realtor, or is it a world's best realtor podcast? Have a good one. I'll talk to you soon.